This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Poet Mary Kratt grew up in the countryside, surrounded by trees, the occasional quail hunter, and not much else. As a little girl, she spent most of her time on her own, walking through the woods in the Piedmont, and she became a keen observer of her surroundings. Today, she says that's exactly why she is successful as a poet. She notices things that most other people don't. Mary has authored 6 volumes of poetry and a number of books and essays on Charlotte history, and she joins me now from partner station WFAE in Charlotte to preview her newest collection of poetry, Watch Where You Walk. Mary Kratt, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Tell me more about your childhood growing up in the countryside. Where were you, and what was that like?
Well, that was out east of Charlotte in what is now Boomtown. We have many subdivisions and so forth where my father hunted for quail. Earlier than that, I was living in West Virginia, where my father took a job after college and was an editor of a newspaper in Beckley, West Virginia, which is where I was born. And we moved to Charlotte probably when I was in the 11th grade, and that's where I, with my dog, wandered around in the woods among land that some of my cousins owned near the church where we attended, out Presbyterian Church out east of Charlotte.
One of the interesting things to me, it would seem, in walking around and spending enough time in that sort of environment, is that you develop an ear for things. It's quiet, and you develop an ear, I would think, for subtle sounds. Is that something that you think informs your poetry?
Yes, that's true, and I feel sorry for people with earbuds in their ears walking around. I walked 2 miles this morning, and the sounds of the woods, the wet woods, the streets was quite different from walking around when it was dry and parched and hot, and the trucks going by and the airplanes overhead. The sounds of the world are as fascinating as the smells.
Your grandmother lived with your family for a while, and a lot of your earliest poems, it seems, were based on that time period. Tell us more about that.
Well, she was one, had 7 children. My mother was the only daughter, and she lived with us, not totally, but she would visit from house to house, and she stayed with us quite a bit, and she was a country preacher's daughter, and she was widowed fairly in her 40s, and her children, her sons, would come and visit. And there was no television in those days. We had 1 car, and so I was at home with my dog and my family in the woods. And so I watched these brothers come and visit. I learned a lot about who was poor, who was rich, what their vocation was. I learned a lot about the world from watching these family members come and visit, the cousins and so forth. So it was a southern kind of home where people came and went and talked jokes and southern talk.
Well, and as you suggest, these social relations become important. It's inherently, right, important. If they're always talking about these people and who they are and how they relate to each other, what you intuit and internalize from that is how people relate to each other is important, right?
That's true. That's true. It's very funny, and they're always characterizing families and people and making jokes. And, of course, they make nicknames. They had nicknames for people in the old days.
Your latest collection pays homage to both your grandmother and your mother. Maybe you can set up the poem, Field Trip from Assisted Living. It's a wonderful poem, and maybe you can tell us more about it.
Yes, my mother lived to the age of 101. And she was in a retirement home not far from me, and I would go by and visit. And as she progressed from traveling to an apartment living to assisted living and became someone who was marooned in her assisted living room and in her bed, I would get stories from the people that worked out there, the nurses and the activities director. And this is the best one from the activities director, who described going to Mother's door one day and saying, asking her if she wanted to go on a mystery ride, which was, of course, a limited adventure in a bus or a van someplace they didn't know where they were going. So I'm going to read it, and it's called Field Trip from Assisted Living. At the door of Mother's room, the activity director asks, "Ms. Norton," and she moves over to Mother's bed, "would you like to go with us on the mystery ride?" Quickly, Mother answers, "Honey, am on a mystery ride.
Field trip from assisted living poet Mary Kratt, reading from her latest volume, Watch Where You Walk. It's wonderful because it's a story. I mean, there's a very short narrative in that tiny, tiny little bit of verse. Do you think of your poems as narrative? Do you feel them as stories when you write them?
Well, some of the best things you hear are conversations or dialogue. And usually I insert a really good quote that's directly from someone into a piece of prose or poetry because it stands out and it makes if a really good piece of dialogue. You can't really improve on it. All you need to do is a very small frame.
Yeah, but that goes back to that ear that you develop from listening to the actual unmediated world and not the mediated world that comes through those headphones. You actually develop an ear for that kind of thing, and you can hear it not only for the content of the quote, but its cadence and how it sort of is more poetic than just the content of the words themselves, I would guess.
Yes, that's true.
You have another story that you tell is the story of the time your family met Carl Sandburg. Maybe you should tell us the story, and then we can hear the poem.
Yes. Well, in West Virginia, my father, as an editor of a newspaper, knew people that were coming through West Virginia, although it was extremely rural and I-77 had not even been dreamed of in those days. And for some reason, my parents got in the car. Mother was an English teacher, so they were interested in literary things, which rarely came to Beckley. So we got in the car and drove over one night up and down the roads, the switchbacks and in the dark, to this tiny place, which was just a house. I guess in North Carolina terms, it would be more like a mill village house, very modest. And we went into this one room, which was a kitchen with a table. And there was this bare light bulb hanging from a string or a wire from the ceiling. And there was Carl Sandburg. And so the poem is called Seeing Carl Sandburg. It was dark when we found it. White, just somebody's house. That night my parents drove crooked roads to sit in a room with one swinging overhead light. And here the visitor, a shirt-sleeved, green-visored poet who played a guitar. We were West Virginia. He was Chicago. His hair cream bright. My first guitar, first poet. He spoke words plain as whole notes. And later, down the mountain, we carried them.
Seeing Carl Sandburg, a poem by Mary Kratt, my guest today on The State of Things. What was that visit like for you? Were you old enough to know kind of who it was that you were visiting?
No, not actually. I think the sight and sound of him was more impressive than anything else. I just knew it was some sort of personage we were going to see. And my folks took me to whatever there was to see, whether it was the high school football team or the Trapp family singers who came one time to the high school auditorium in Beckley, West Virginia, in probably the late 1940s. That was a really big deal. But it's Carl Sandburg in an adjacent village was a very big deal for me.
Tell us about your interest in history, because not only do you write poetry, but you do write historical pieces. And for a while, we're doing it for the Charlotte Observer, right?
Well, I did as a stringer or a volunteer. I wrote what they call Piedmont guidebooks. I would travel somewhere and get fascinated by what started a place like Brightleaf Square in Durham or Kannapolis. What is that name, Kannapolis, and who built that big mill there and why was it there? And I would come back to town and I would write it was about 600 words, and I would send it into the Charlotte Observer and they would publish them maybe one a month or so. But it was something that piqued my curiosity and made me look up the story of the town or the name of the town or the name of the person whose statue was in the square. And I've just always had a lot of curiosity, and I think a writer, memory, curiosity, and imagination are three things that really help you, particularly if you're writing poetry or if you're looking at reading history or looking up historical figures.
And as I understand it, you also became interested in the untold parts of the story. Your curiosity extended beyond what you found in the archive to wonder about whose story was not being told.
That's true. That's true. An example of that is wandering up with my husband to Salisbury, which is about 50 miles up 85 from where I live in Charlotte. I was doing some research to do a tour up there of old homes in the neighborhood. Salisbury is a very charming town and has been that way even when George Washington came through. He was impressed with Salisbury, not at all impressed with Charlotte. But there in Salisbury, I began to wonder, you have a federal cemetery with hundreds of crosses, and then you have this large mound of empty grass. And as I read the history of the place, I realized that we usually in Americans think of mass graves. We think of Auschwitz or Syria or Afghanistan or Russia. But there up my southern road was a mass grave of prisoners. They were northern Union soldiers who were imprisoned by the Confederates in this prison camp in Salisbury. And so I just became fascinated with the idea of what it would be like to be a villager in the town of Salisbury in the 1860s and be aware at night across the railroad tracks where hundreds and hundreds of men cramped together in bad conditions in this old cotton mill that was standing over there. And so this poem called Bodies came from that imaginary experience. Most everything I write comes from the fact that I have walked the ground and smelled the air and noticed what trees were growing and so forth. So this is called Bodies. When I think of bodies piled in trenches, the sharp stink of summer death and winter's fixed posture of frozen bodies, arms everywhere and frozen feet, it is Baba Yar and Auschwitz. But no, up my southern road, a long, soft mound of dirt slowly settled into that gradual grass of forgetting. A mass grave of 5,000, maybe more. Again in my life, I am wrong, I am wrong. Somewhere, nothing is forgotten. In a historic Salisbury house 50 miles north, close by the rail line, here is the sketch of the town's tall brick cotton mill used for a Civil War prison. At first, prisoners mingled in the village and traded for tobacco, but the war that was not supposed to last slogged on, as wars do. Prisoners were no longer exchanged for the enemies, and no one left except in death, and not even then. Behind the stockade, the stench of filth and torment of rats at night, the acrid smoke and years of awful crowding, 10,000 men move through here, in space for 1,000 in a town not much bigger, both men and townspeople at night, awake and listening. As I walk through the streets of the quiet town, what's wrong is to forget those nights and that day captives were freed, men who ate corn cob pudding and mouse soup, trudging north to freedom, anyone who could, in a line 2 miles long, wearing the coarse clothes of the dead.
The poem is Bodies, and the writer is Mary Kratt. My guest today, her latest volume is called Watch Where You Walk, New and Selected Poems. I'm curious, when you talk about going to spaces and walking across the ground, feeling the air and taking a look at your surroundings, how does the poem come to you? Do you begin to see words? Do you start to feel the personages? How does the poem come to you?
Well, sometimes a piece of history, a fact, takes you to the place, like to Harriet Jacobs in New Bern, North Carolina, way east of where I live in eastern North Carolina. Reading about her at the archives in North Carolina History Museum, took me to King Street in New Bern, and I walked down that street, which is not at all like what it looked like in the 1860s, but I knew that somewhere along this street had been a house where this woman, as a young woman, as a mother, had been sort of imprisoned. She imprisoned herself in her uncle's attic in order to avoid the man who owned her, who lived down the street. In other cases, sometimes I will go down to coastal South Carolina or around Wrightsville and go to some of these old plantations, and they're very evocative of stories. So I come back and I read about all the books that I can find about the plantation homes, who lived there, why they were there, what they grew, what their whole life was about, their slaves, their animals, their crops. And it's, you can't be in, walk in the ground and smelling the air of where people like this were without imagining what their life must have been like.
Are you ever inspired then to write essays about these same subjects?
I'm not a very good essay writer. There's a certain form to essays, and you're allowed a lot more words. I do better when I can pare the words really down to some very specific, fine, descriptive things that you can visualize. Essays are more about you take ideas and you have a certain form to flesh them out. And I'm better, really, at short things. Maybe it's because I started writing when my children were small, and that's all the time I had.
Well, that's all the time we have, but it was a pleasure spending this time with you, Mary Kratt. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Charlotte-based poet and historian Mary Kratt. You can find out more about her poetry and read her poems from the latest collection, Watch Where You Walk, at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Widarski sitting in today. Andrew Tai is our intern. Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.